This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares part of the Franklin Mass Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, February 16, 2022. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Members of the Town Council, Town Administration personnel, the police new hires, along with their guests and family members were in the council chambers. Some members of the public participated in person, some via the Zoom conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the three-hour and 10-minute meeting into three logical segments. First covers the opening, swearing-in of the four police department new hires and the West Street Dean College neighborhood parking discussion. That runs approximately 55 minutes. Second covers the diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, presentation and discussion led by Superintendent Sarah Ahern and Assistant Superintendent Lucas Jaguer. That runs approximately 90 minutes. And third covers the subcommittee reports, legislation for action, council comments, and the meeting close, the remaining 41 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and to my notes. So let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of February 16, 2022.
Okay, next item on the agenda is a presentation from the Superintendent of Schools and the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion piece. They had a very lengthy discussion and presentation at the school committee, and we asked Superintendent Ahern if she would come before the council and give a little shortened version of that presentation. So with that, Superintendent, please.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you inviting us to be here tonight. I'm joined by Lucas Jaguer, the Assistant Superintendent. Denise Spencer, school committee chair, is in the audience, and there may be some folks online, but I can't quite tell. But I'm really happy to be invited here and to share our work with you. We can't do it alone, and so I appreciate the interest that you're taking. I think schools are don't exist in isolation. They're a microcosm of the greater community, and so again, I think that it's really important to have this opportunity. We intentionally shared the entire presentation that we had given to the school committee in your packet, and I appreciate that several members of town council attended saw the presentation either in person or on Zoom. Probably not speaking loud enough. And we're not going to go through every single slide. We did spend probably about 90 minutes talking about it. We did also have additional presenters with us. And so people who are watching this, or if you're interested, maybe go back and watch the school committee recording, because you'll hear directly from people who are working in these areas a little bit more detail than what we'll share tonight. But if you don't mind, we did anchor some remarks in an abridged executive summary version of our presentation, and we can make this available to you. You have all of the content, I think, in your packet. So when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and what you're going to hear from us this evening is really around kind of school-based efforts that are happening in all of the schools at all of the levels by administrators, faculty and staff, families and students, as well as a special committee that we're running across the district, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. We've set a mission of affirming diversity, promoting equity, and fostering inclusion, and both the 40-member committee and other teams at the school level really work hand-in-hand on what these efforts are. We had Khalees Warnham of KW Diversity do some foundational professional development with our administrative team in the, in the 1920 school year, so it was the year the pandemic hit. And this was kind of a foundation that she laid around criteria for culturally proficient school districts. And we had been using language like cultural proficiency for a couple of years prior, but this really resonated for me and for the admin team. We take the time to listen to who students say they are and what their needs are. putting their needs first above that of the system. Achievement, outcome, and opportunity gaps were present before we arrived, but we may not ignore them. And so our responsibility and opportunity, especially as educators, is to illuminate and address them. We also must be willing to examine our own, either individually or collectively, values, behaviors, and the policies and practices in our district. And so this foundation was I think, huge with the admin team in terms of setting a direction towards cultural proficiency. The Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee first identified some language in terms of what do we mean when we talk about diversity, and we're intentionally talking about a broad area related to individuals' identities, thoughts, ideas, perspectives, and values, and the fluidity through which some of these may evolve. So it may include race, ethnicity, gender identity or expression, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, age, religious beliefs, culture, national origin, disability, and cognitive styles. And so in this presentation, you'll hear a bit about all of those areas and ways in which we're looking to promote that equity. And we set an objective for ourselves to do it by listening, learning, acting, and reflecting. I don't want to pretend that we are perfect. We're putting our best efforts forward, and through difficult conversations and professional development and studying and responding and reflecting, we're all continuing to learn and doing better. And why? Why are we doing it? We're doing it for our graduates. Each and every graduate and current student, future graduate of the Franklin Public Schools needs to be learning about ways in which they can promote social justice, affirm diversity, and create a more equitable community. And in fact, the skills are embedded in what the community's consensus has been for our vision of our graduates, including the social awareness through inclusivity and the consideration of various perspectives, analyzing, evaluating, and synthesizing relevant information from multiple perspectives, varied viewpoints, and sources, listening with an open mind and embracing respectful, inclusive, and culturally aware approach, and identifying and analyzing problems from multiple perspectives. As our students become more diverse, we want to make sure that each student sees themselves reflected in the Franklin Public Schools community, but I would also offer that it's important for students who identify in majority groups to also be fostering these skills, again, so we can create a more equitable and just society. So selected areas of focus that we'll talk about this evening. We'll talk a bit about school committee leadership and some of the steps that the school committee has taken, professional development for faculty and staff, highlighted areas of curriculum and instruction, school culture, both proactive and as well as reactive or responses within the school culture and district supports. So in terms of school committee leadership, there were several slides in the original presentation that just went into all of the detail in terms of the numerous equity-focused resolutions that MASC had put forward, and that the school committee, either the current committee or the previous committees as well, had adopted. Some of them included things like access to menstrual products. Another one included, probably most notably, anti-racism in the summer of 2020. So there's been several resolutions which, once adopted, yield some advocacy in terms of legislation, typically, by MASC. We have embedded some goals in our district improvement plans since before I arrived. So when I came in 2017, there were some initiatives around cultural proficiency. But since then, we kind of elevated this idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion from a single initiative to one that really is something that we should examine all of our goals through. And then lastly, we've been taking some time with school committee policies, with contracts, as we thought about how we enroll new students to make sure that we're approaching it in a way that's accessible and inclusive. Some of the policies include a financial assistance policy that extends beyond free and reduced lunch for some of our fee-based programs. We also have a homework policy that we aim to have be more equitable, recognizing that there's different levels of family support in terms of completing homework. We have a policy on dress code that was examined to be more equitable. Typically, that can be biased against females. And so the dress code policy has been examined. And so there's other examples as well. In terms of contracts, looking to eliminate gender-based language or other language that may be biased. When we're enrolling students, we not only listen to students, but we also listen to their families. And we had some feedback from families about how our enrollment form was very traditional. And families can look a lot different and not necessarily what we always consider, with more grandparents, more same gendered parents. And so our enrollment forms now reflect parent one, parent guardian one, parent guardian two, to reflect more diversity among our families.
Can I piggyback on that, Dr. Hurt?
Sure.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Also with our enrollment process, we've made it more accessible to families that have a primary language other than English, to just facilitate that process a little bit easier and not create a chilling effect for folks if they can't access the language, to make sure that we're creating a system and a welcoming environment for all families that are residents of town that are looking to register children.
And I guess lastly, what I would point to here is a recent suggestion around the school calendar and the consideration of holidays that are recognized within the school calendar. I think with all of this, I think we all feel a sense of urgency, but some matters may also need to be a little thoughtful and deliberate, not because we don't believe in them, but want to make sure that we're being mindful of a range of diverse perspectives. And so there's a suggestion to examine the calendar a little bit more fully before the following school year's calendar is set. Luca is going to talk a little bit about some professional development.
So as Dr. Hearn said, to start this off, certainly we recognize there's work to be done, and there will continue to be work that needs to be done in this area. I don't think you're ever done with this work. And I just wanted to name that, because we're putting efforts forward, but recognize that there's more that we want to do and plan to do. So with regard to what's occurred through professional development, you heard Dr. Hearn mentioned Khalees Warner, who came and trained our admin team, but also then trained our entire district and all of our teachers in the areas which she described. Speak Up at School was a follow-up. One thing we believe in is you can't do a one-stop shop PD type model. It's got to be a systematic approach in looking for ways in which you can continue to carry the work forward. We used through, it was Teaching Tolerance, it's now Learning for Justice is the group. Put together the Speak Up at School, which was a PD, which really helps faculty and staff really look to interrupt situations that occur, whether it's a microaggression or something more severe, to really look to call it out and name it. The PD that we did, we talked through some of the ways in which that can occur, and then what the schools did is they went into their building-based staff meetings and they continued, and it talks about the different areas where these things can occur, whether it's a hallway or a cafeteria or a classroom and whatnot. So I see this being continued to be follow-up on. We had a professional development day where staff could choose to go to different areas where they got to select where they wanted to spend some time in PD. So everybody got this, but then there were additional follow-ups where you could choose, and it was facilitated by some of our lead teachers who went through this. We also train our new hires in this as part of the onboarding process, and we'll continue to strengthen those efforts. So when we invest in an employee and we expect to put them in front of kids, they have the training and tools they need to come along with the rest of the group, similarly to how they would with their curriculum. The LGBTQ plus safe schools from DESE, we've had our elementary schools trained in this area, and it's really to support staff and counselors and leadership on students transitioning, students who are exploring their identity, and really trying to provide our staff with the tools to be a support and to really work through that and have a firm understanding and be as supportive as possible. Incorporating DEI in the curriculum projects, Dr. Hearn mentioned the lens in which we look through this. two things I'd mention in this area. So the forms of bias that can exist in instructional materials is one lens. As we look to continue to build upon a curriculum review cycle, not only are we looking at SEL and looking at the curriculum standards that you're expected to be taught, students are expected to be taught and learn and master, but also we're looking at, through a DEI lens, is the curriculum appropriate? Is it telling the correct narrative? Is the story right? Are there opportunities for kids? When you think about them, you probably heard this before, it's also in the presentation around windows, mirrors, and doors in our curriculum. So a window, right? Do I see someone else's perspective? Do all students get that opportunity? If I look in a mirror, do I see myself in the curriculum? And is it accurate, the portrayal? And then a sliding glass door is, you know, now that I've learned this, have I reflected on it, and what have I taken away from those experiences? And that's the idea of adding a sliding glass door. So that's an analogy that's often used. I know the high school specifically, I can name from the last time we did this presentation, talked about in their course of like partners, really trying to examine from those particular lenses. Listening to student voice. We've had students involved in our district PD presenting to staff on our panels. Resource groups, trying to explore those opportunities for students to receive continued support. And trauma-informed schools, which is an area that we'll continue to explore as we work to help support our students.
I want to talk a little bit about some highlights in terms of curriculum and instruction. I think there are opportunities in all of our curricular areas to infuse diversity, equity, and inclusion, but these are some of the highlights. As Lucas was talking about, English Language Arts is a place that we're looking to expand the titles that students are reading so that there's more diverse characters, more diverse settings, so that students see themselves reflected in the books, or they may learn about others and be invited into those worlds. And if you were at the school committee presentation, we had a display of some of those books, particularly the children's literature, that are being expanded in classroom libraries as well as courses at the older grades. We are also continuing to foster the reading of texts that may be a bit challenging with some mature topics, and providing professional development to our faculty and staff to create safe spaces in classrooms around those texts. So To Kill a Mockingbird and The Bluest Eye being two examples. History and social sciences is a big area that we are focusing on. There are new curriculum frameworks. At this point, they're 4 years old, but they still feel new from the Massachusetts Department of Education. These curriculum frameworks were intentionally written to reflect the diversity of the United States, with attention paid to the contributions of people of all genders, ethnicities, and backgrounds. And so we are have been working towards aligning our curriculum and instruction to those standards, and also looking for some new texts that are more modern, more up-to-date, and more reflective of this diversity. In social studies, we also have some exciting civics projects, particularly among our eighth graders. Several of those civics projects have a social justice lean to them. And race in American society has been in our program of studies for a number of years, but we had committed this year to making sure that it runs, and so we have that course running at the high school. In terms of health and wellness, this is an area that I think people are not completely aware of, but I'm proud of the work of all of our staff. But I think what they've done in health and wellness was really proactive and ahead of the changes that came from DESE related to how health and wellness is taught. So our health and wellness teachers participated in some of the Safe Schools LGBTQIA+ professional development. And across our curriculum, grades 4 up to the high school, they have discontinued separating students by gender in terms of health and wellness instruction. And there's a couple of different reasons for this. One is to normalize the changes that bodies experience, all bodies experience, through puberty and development. But it also has been demonstrated that when instruction is shaped this way, that there is less gender-based violence in the future. And so all students are receiving the same health and wellness curriculum. As they learn about changing bodies and they learn about puberty, they've also brought in more multicultural hygiene products so that it's not instructed from a strictly white lens. And so there's more diversity reflected there as well. They have also diverse CPR mannequins and are looking to make sure that diversity is reflected there. Healthy relationships. And then lastly, some of the PE lessons are also incorporating sports and games from around the world, including the Olympics. But they also have Paralympics and Special Olympics included as well. So again, this broad idea of diversity also extends to our health and wellness curriculum. I couldn't be more proud of the Seal of Biliteracy. The Seal of Biliteracy is a special distinction that students at the high school can be recognized with. They demonstrate literacy in two languages, English being one, and another language. I think that this is really important in terms of highlighting and emphasizing some of the special skills that our English learners bring. I'm quite frankly jealous and envious and maybe aspire one day to become fluent in a second language. I think it's important to acknowledge that asset. And so it's not only English learners that can earn the seal. We do have students whose primary language is English earning it as well through our World Language Program, but I think it's an important, a really important distinction, and it's recognized by the state. And we had graduated our first graduates last year. We had four, two of which were ESL students previously.
Dr. Hearn, can I follow up on that as well?
Mm-hmm.
When students who register, sometimes with their families, when we meet, we have those discussions to kind of reframe the conversation around, instead of having a deficit kind of mindset of, I don't know English, it's I'm coming with this language that I've learned, that's my primary language, and now I need to learn English. So I've actually done some work in my own home, raising my own children around this. Is like, let's not look at folks who have an accent, because what an accent means is that they've acquired a language, they've acquired English, and they're still attaching or applying some of the functions of their own language in their conversation, and that's where that comes from. So let's not think that way, and I think that's an important message that we all can take away, just as adults, because sometimes that comes up. We do try to that's part of the welcome of trying to register, and we register folks around that. So oftentimes they've logged in, they've completed their registration in their own language, they come, and then a meeting might take place, and sometimes that's the case. And our principals and our staff have been wonderful in that area and welcoming. And the Seal of Biliteracy is just, to me, the culminating goal that any person can aspire to reach.
You are probably well aware of our inclusive classrooms through, in particular, special education, with kind of a continuum and a range of services from within the least restrictive environment. And we're really proud of our work with our specialized programs in particular, keeping students in the district and you know, learning in their community schools. Lucas will talk a little bit more about that in school culture as well. I've worked in a couple of different districts, and I think that we really take finances off the table for families with respect to providing core instructional, core curriculum materials, and that doesn't happen everywhere, and I think it's important that you know that. And then families don't have to worry about that. From an economic standpoint, we are seeing an increased percentage of families who are struggling economically. Similarly, we are well supported and really appreciative of the work of our parent communication councils, who provide enrichment as well as field trips to students. And again, having worked in a couple of different communities, it is not uncommon for a family to have to pay for a field trip. But here in Franklin, the financial aspect of that is off the table through the contributions of the PCCs, and therefore the families who contribute to those fundraising efforts. Curriculum is something that extends to all subjects, as I had noted, and we'll just talk a little bit about the curriculum review cycle and making sure that we have, the DEI committee, one of the subcommittees, is developing a rubric around evaluating instructional materials for bias.
So school culture and core values. So sometimes we see the words core values and mission statements, and I'm reminded, and I mentioned this at the last meeting during school committee, when I was in the Marines, and I remember our drill instructor talking about core values and trying to emphasize that, you know, they're more than words. And I think through just some leadership opportunities and discussing it, they really have to be a lived experience for everyone in that community. So our elementary schools have developed these core values, our middle schools and high school, but ultimately, unless a core value is lived, and I think that's the work, that's part of the work, is really how are these experienced for our kids, and recognizing that it takes time, and it takes a commitment, and it takes actionable steps. I will say I'm reading, and I mentioned this to Dr. Hearn, I'm reading Atomic Habits, and it talks about you can have every goal in the world set, but if your systems, you will rise to the level of your systems, and that's kind of a core message in there, is how are your systems set up? So just thinking about that from both of those lenses is you have to have strong goals with actionable steps, but you also need systems that support that. So I would just talk about that as that's how values become lived. We have responsive classroom. In our K-8 classrooms, our teachers have been trained, which is really around building community, building safe, psychologically safe environments for kids. A world of difference, we have our students being trained as peer leaders in this area to work. Our eighth graders are being trained to then train and deliver lessons around anti-bias curriculum to our sixth graders. And they're in training, they had their first one, I want to say last week, and they have to have their next one. I think it was scheduled during the snow. No Place for Hate, the high school is seeking to attain a No Place for Hate designation. There's four phases to that work. The first is to really bring in a student committee. The second phase is the pledge, which some of you have committed and pledged to be a No Place for Hate school. And the next two stages are listening to student voice, which is the next phase that we're preparing, and then implementing. So with that in mind, I know this ties in with the equity audit and trying to really make sure we understand what is our data saying, what are our kids saying, and what's our community saying, to really try to make an actionable plan, and then really start to examine those systems and how are they functioning. Our resource groups for students to create a safe space for kids that are aligned or identify so that they, once again, talked about trying to create community, trying to build those spaces for kids. And we have that at the high school. It's being explored at the middle. Our unified sports, we have really, really successful unified sports teams that are super inclusive and successful in every way, not just performance on the court, but certainly within the culture and community that they're building. We talked about the calendar and holiday and months of recognition and really trying to draw attention so that it's an educational opportunity for students as we have holidays come up throughout the calendar year. And then the survey piece gets into what I just mentioned around the equity audit component. Anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I just want to add. I think school culture is incredibly important, and this slide, and we actually had a quote in the original presentation about just how important school culture is, because from there, everything else, all the other outcomes flow. And this slide is intentionally structured around some of the proactive and positive things that our administrators and teachers are doing to promote school culture with students and families. I think that, unfortunately, the pandemic and having remote school, hybrid school, has stalled some of our efforts in this area. We have, in particular, a world of difference. So we had some great momentum with A World of Difference. It was started in the 17-18 school year. We had trained several cohorts of students. It is something that the high school kids talk about. They talk about it. But with the pandemic in 1920, we trained students, but they couldn't execute their lessons. So these peer leaders are trained and they execute lessons to younger children about bias. And the pandemic happened in 2020, and there were no lessons for those sixth graders. Then in 2021, there was no training for a new group of peer leaders and therefore no lessons to a new group of sixth graders. And the high school has struggled with some of the similar lack of options for training. So we've recommitted this year to, and we have been training a new group of peer leaders at the middle school and the high school, but it's a really good example of the pandemic causing a major disruption in one area that has been so positive in terms of school culture. No Place for Hate, I want to hang a sign on as well. In order to move forward, that pledge required 75% of students signing on to participate in 3 school-wide activities to follow to earn this No Place for Hate designation. And the students who kind of spearheaded this were members of some of our clubs like Diversity Awareness, SAGA, which is related to sexuality awareness and gender, the Girl Up Club, as well as the World of Difference Peer Leaders. And so that's the group that's spearheading that. But I did want to just sort of pause and note that so many of these things around school culture have been really, really disrupted with the pandemic. And I think we're, as a result, kids are feeling what's called broken belongings and struggling in some social and emotional ways to connect.
So there's the proactive side, and then there's a reactive side to some of this. We seek to educate all kids and to build respectful environments. Unfortunately, violations do occur. They do occur in our schools, they occur in our town and in our country. And just to give you some statistics, you'll notice a gap from 2017 and 18, 18-19, and then you'll notice 19-20, 20-21. Those pandemic years were really, when students weren't together, it doesn't paint the accurate picture. It was underreported and underrepresented. You will notice an uptick this year already. We're not through the school year, we're at 60 investigations and some findings of bullying, civil rights violations. And typically, as we mentioned at the beginning of it, a civil rights violation, when there's a finding, it's when it's determined that you could be unkind to someone, and if that's targeted and repeated over time, that's bullying. But if it's targeted or it's targeted towards someone based on a specific civil right or a protected class, that's when it gets into a civil rights violation. So we, at the class meetings, I'm remembering the beginning of the year that the high school and our middle schools, they've also done some recommitting work with different grades that they're rolling out now for March to recommit. But I'm thinking about the beginning of the year, the slides that the high school presented, and talk about really unkind behavior and jokes. There's a little bit of a joke culture where jokes that maybe I think jokes that are occurring are not ones that I can remember ever being funny, but I think society and the culture of students right now, I don't think some of them fully understand. Even if you provide a lesson, there's a little bit of a disconnect. So that's some serious work, because there's victims on the other end of that that don't deserve that. So that's tremendous work, and we're committed to that work. But I will say, when the next slide actually gets into the process we take, just to kind of walk through. So our policies, we are currently with the policy subcommittee of the school committee reviewing our bullying policy and updating it. We're adding pieces to it that we received some feedback from the community on around timelines and whatnot to really beef up and provide some specificity in the policy. That will then trigger us to redo our bullying and prevention plan. It has to match our policies like the primary source, and then it needs to follow through. We also have policies for non-discrimination, harassment, and sexual harassment under Title IX, which is a federal regulation. So just as far as procedures go, our reporting system, we have a reporting mechanism for online. You can email someone, you can tell an adult, you can tell a teacher. All staff take a mandated training at the beginning of the year around this and how to push that forward. At that point, it triggers some interim measures or supportive measures where, okay, we receive this information, this kid told us, we're going to create some interim supports. What needs to happen in the meantime while we investigate? That takes place. Then your interviews take place. We have a flow chart that we follow to make sure that everyone gets interviewed, if there are witnesses and whatnot. We have a template that we use to kind of standardize investigations across the district at all 10 schools. And then from there, we would be, if there's a finding or a determination, you have consequences. And then also, it's not just consequences, but what type of education is required. And I can remember a time when it was strictly consequences. And what we've learned is you need to pair that often with what type of, how do we educate a student who, you know, made a mistake, and how do we allow them to somehow repair the situation as appropriate as possible. We have a system, as you can see from the last slide, around documenting and tracking. And then safety and support plans. So if someone's been found to be a victim of an issue, whether it's bullying or whatnot, what type of plan? So meeting with their family, meeting with the student. What do they need to feel safe in school? So these are pieces, and then opportunities for healing as well. So these are the steps that we take. Not often. It's not always publicized. I think the work that our admin teams do, they work extremely hard when they have this information to work through these processes. But certainly, sometimes between two people, when that happens, you know, these conversations are happening with their families. It doesn't take away from the work that needs to happen for all kids. But I just wanted to point out kind of how we respond to person.
I just want to pause a bit on communication. So one of the things that we evaluate in terms of communicating around incidents is the kind of breadth of impact. And so there have been times where a message has gone out from a principal or from my office related to an incident, recognizing that it has kind of a broad sense of impact. There are other times too for privacy purposes in particular that we have to be mindful of. Also too, if the impact is a bit more contained to a smaller number of individuals where we might not share the information, and we certainly don't share entirely confidential information about students. But that's why sometimes you may see something and sometimes you don't. You think of the breadth of impact. Behind all this, there are some other efforts underway related to district level support. We do have a posting up for a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion to support students, families, faculty and staff, administrators, and central office with this work. It is a position that I think districts are increasingly expanding to, much like private businesses and private companies have directors of diversity to help with the goals. A number of us are working within a professional development community. There's about 100 districts participating in an online PLC, we call them, for professional learning around educator diversification. So we have, you saw the statistics of our students. We have an increasing level of diversity among our student population, which I would expect to continue to grow. But our faculty and staff do not reflect that level of diversity. And the research is really, really clear in terms of, we talked about representation and students seeing themselves represented in books. It's also really clear in terms of student learning outcomes, the impact that having, if they're a member of, for example, identifying as a student of color, having an educator, even one educator through their pre-K to 12 career, the impact of that on their student learning outcomes, we would aspire to more. Again, it's not solely to support students of color, it's to support all of our students and help them grow into the best citizens that they can be. We're participating in this diversification PLC to learn. It's not just a matter of setting a goal of hiring a more diverse staff. How do you recruit and support and retain and the best practices there? We have, in my time here in Franklin, thought about how we make budget allocations, and we consider it from a financial perspective. And so site-based monies that are allocated to schools are distributed slightly differently depending upon the demographics of that school, in particular economic status. And we think that that's only equitable and fair. It's how the state allocates Chapter 70 money. And so we have done that behind the scenes as well to kind of level the playing field. There are numerous conversations that I have with the joint PCCs to make sure that PCC spending is equitable. It doesn't have to be identical, but we look to see spending as being equitable across the levels. And we are currently in the process of an equity audit, having a third party, the public consulting group, do an analysis, both quantitative as well as qualitative through focus groups, to provide us with some input and some feedback. I'm really looking forward to hearing about what the equity audit uncovers. I think it will really help develop a longer-term plan and also help set priorities. You know, I hope one takeaway that you have is just how comprehensive our efforts have been. I think we'd like some feedback. I think we'd like to hear voices and understand perspectives. And sometimes with a third party, you get some more unfiltered information. And again, you know, what are some of the higher leverage areas that we can push forward with in a longer term plan? So we're looking forward to hearing more about what the equity audit uncovers. The DEI committee is continuing to work. We talked a little bit about some of their efforts today. They have some goals. We are planning on sharing more at the end of the year as more outcomes come out of that committee. But a lot of their work centers around some of what we talked about tonight. And so they're complementing and supporting efforts in our schools. So some selected next steps. We're sharing with you. I don't think any of this is new information from what we shared tonight, so I'll kind of abbreviate these final comments and invite any comments or questions through the chair.
Thank you, Dr. Hearn. Lucas, thank you very much. It was certainly a great presentation. And one of the things that we've talked about last time you came before us, this is a little different audience than you get from school committee meetings, town council, whether it be Zoom or whether it be on TV, they are a little bit different. So I think it's really important that we get this, have you come visit occasionally and bring good information like this brought before us so that our people can understand. So, questions or comments from the council? Councilor Cormier-Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Welcome, and thank you for that thorough yet abbreviated presentation from the school committee meeting. I was very happy to be in the audience last week, I guess, and hear the full thing, and just to truly recognize all of the work involved in everything that you're doing, because we have to recognize that all of this is above and beyond educating our kids and supporting our parents and supporting faculty and dealing with a pandemic and all of the other things that go into education. So thank you for everything that you're doing. I want to applaud you publicly for, in a time nationally when some school committees are taking books away, you're looking at how can you add books. When some communities across the country and school committees are meeting to say, let's restrict history lessons to a particular group because we don't want to be inclusive of a true narrative, I heard last week that you were actually looking at new books to be purchased, history books that are far more inclusive of a greater American story, and I think that's fantastic and incredibly needed in this day and age. I say all of that, and now my criticism really comes to the greater community, I guess, because we've got a lot of work to do. And you started off your presentation by saying that, you know, this is a much bigger issue and that you're not perfect and it's a microcosm, and I fully support that. And what I hope you'll be able to share with us tonight is, how can we help? How can the police chief help? How can the town administrator help? How can the chief of the fire department help? How is this an issue, because I believe it is, where I think we've got students who spoke up, were very eloquent. The young lady that spoke up in October at the school committee after being attacked, she talked very eloquently about some of her experiences. We had students make a video not very long ago where they talked about some of their experiences. These kids are speaking up, and we as the grown-ups and the people with decision-making authority have to listen to them. So I hope that something we can leave with tonight from you is, what do you need? If it's financial resources, then that falls on us to talk about. If it's, you know, we don't have X in order to do this important work, then I want to know about it so that we can at least talk through some possible solutions. And I do think maybe involving our religious community, our businesses, like these are bigger discussions than just what's happening in school, because as Lucas mentioned, there's a lot of stuff being talked about at home, right? But I would, you know, if you wouldn't mind responding to maybe a few things that we could do to help you with this.
Sure, thank you for the question. I'm really appreciative that you asked. I will start not homing in on the financial pieces, but first more around the non-financial ones. And I really want to give a lot of credit and accolades to the town administrator, Jamie Helen, who has been just an incredible resource and guide and partner and somebody to debrief incidents with and to talk through and to also share the larger context and understand. So I really value that. And really appreciative of that. I think we are making some strides in the community with the Franklin Freedom Team. Kobe Frangillo, Councilor Frangillo, has been serving on that. Jamie's on it, the Chief of Police, myself, some community members. And I think it's taken some time, important time, to develop some relationships. And also be thinking about ways in which the Freedom Team can support the community with all efforts. So I'm appreciative of that foundational piece and look forward to continuing work there. I think one missing piece that I sense and feel so much is around when incidents happen, providing an opportunity to heal. There are some things that we can do internally, providing an opportunity to heal, but I think it's incredibly powerful, particularly to see the numbers of supportive people and supporters out there. So our students and our families and our faculty and staff know that the community's behind them. And so what comes to mind are things like the Love Franklin initiative that came out of the Interfaith Council that I think was really meaningful. I framed the poster, it's hanging upstairs in our office. And so that showing of love, that showing of support, I don't always know what it looks like and don't always have the most creative ideas, but it's the opportunities for healing that I think are areas that we would really welcome some additional support from the community, because it's that sort of that love and that that groundswell to wrap arms around kids and wrap arms around families, proverbially speaking. In terms of financial resources, I mean, I think you started off your comments by saying you're doing this on top of, you know, other things. I would also say that this is the work. This is part of the work. And so, but it does, you know, there's a lot on people's plates. There's a lot on people's plates. There's a lot of new learning for people to experience, and a lot of difficult learning and unlearning. So I do think that there's a financial component. There's a financial component of resources and materials that have a more full story, like you say, or more diversity reflected. There's a issue around time and making sure that we get enough time for the professional development and the learning and unlearning of faculty and staff. And our administrators are out straight. And with those numbers and the things that are on their plate, our administrators are out straight. And so that's a concern that I have as well. And so there may be some financial components aspects to that too. So thank you for asking. I don't know if that was concrete enough, but those are some things that come to mind, that love and support. And I think the dialogue too, continuing to ask us questions, of not making assumptions and not pointing fingers or assigning blame, but continuing to ask us questions about what's going on, to the extent that we're able, I think we're really happy to share and enlist your support and help us as partners.
Councilor Coleman, all set?
Yes, thank you.
Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Arahe Lucas.
Hi there.
I thought you were coming here tonight definitely to talk about that, the bias-based incidents. Mm-hmm. Like we all have a lot of concerns about that. So it was very, I think as 8 out of the 9 have kids, that 60 investigations and 25 were civil rights. You hear that word, that sounds like a scary word, civil rights violations. So just so people at home know how this kind of works, say you have a civil rights violation. So someone did the swastikas at the school, okay? So you have a harmed individual, you've identified the aggressor, you've communicated with everybody, you have evidence. What's the step after that? Please.
Speak to that. I spent a couple decades doing that work. So basically, you get a finding, you then notify the families, you set up meetings, you bring them in, you talk with the student and the family for the aggressor and the victim, and you explain that, you know, they violated someone's, if it's a victim or victims, that they violated the civil rights. That's documented too. That's documented. A findings letter goes to the victim and the aggressor that says they've either been a violator or they've been a victim of that. The paperwork part of it aside, there's consequences. You know, when you violate, that's a civil rights piece, but also in the handbook, when you engage in behavior that creates harm, oftentimes it leads to some sort of disciplinary, you know, a corrective action, if you will. It could take a few different looks. If it's a younger student versus a senior in high school, and depending on the nature, I mean, this is nuanced to like what was said, when, how, where, it could look different, and it's a progressive scale. But it could be everything from a loss of privilege to multi-day suspension. Sometimes it's a mix of internal suspension and external, and then in the internal, you're providing education. There's often times, and I mentioned this earlier, where someone thinks something is a joke, and I can be honest with you, some people, some students have a complete disconnect from the civil rights conversation we're having, even if they've been taught and it's been explained and continues. Is truly, I think it's truly a disconnect for them. Oh, I didn't realize me making that joke and saying that word, it didn't connect with me that I violated someone's civil rights. And that's really, that's the work, to work with students, because that has a tremendous, carries tremendous weight, and it can really impact a victim. And to sit with families on both sides of this, as an administrator, it's hard work. You have a hurt person, you have a family, a parent, who feels harmed, and they have a child who has been on the victim side of it. And then sometimes on the other side, you have a family of a parent who is upset around the consequences in the situation. So it's often, that's really hard work, and it occurs in our schools, and we're trying to do that work. I will say, proactively, trying to get to all kids, that conversation at the table, ultimately, our goal is that's not the first time the kids had that conversation. It's has every kid gotten that message, right? And I think that's the work, is at the beginning of the year, each year, as we work through our curriculum and we work with our teams, depending on the grade level, you know, are we having discussions around respect and respecting all individuals? So that when they get to the table, it's not the first time that you're telling a kid that, hey, that was disrespectful and they didn't understand. But that's ultimately, I hope that answers your question, sir.
No, it does. Thank you. I know you've been doing that a long time.
Sure.
Just one last thing. How I describe depression is rage turned inward. You know, it comes inside and eats you up. So I'm really proud of these kids that are turning back outward to report these things, because they really should be proud of themselves. Because that's the worst feeling in the world, to bring it in and just be depressed. But if you can push it out and fight back a little, I'm really proud of those kids that are speaking up right now, because it's hard. It really is.
Can I just add to that?
Because
we didn't fully talk about the resource groups, but I think that's one of the functions of the resource group. We have a gentleman who is the director of diversity, equity, and inclusion in another community as a kind of a consultant meeting with our students. Started at the high school, meeting with some club members who were looking for a space. I mean, when students were kind of speaking out and kind of crying for help, I went around, Jamie went with me to one of the meetings, and just really, from listening to them, they have so much to share. And you could just see the pain and feel, it was palpable, feel the pain in the room. And so we brought in this gentleman to help us help elicit student voices and help students put their voices out as constructively as possible. And so the resource group has been meeting on Wednesday afternoons, took a little bit of a step back because of the Omicron surge. We wanted to be sure that this was all happening in person, but really working with the students, helping them develop I statements about their experiences and asking them to think about what would you want your teacher to know. And he's also met with the high school faculty, and coming up probably in March, there will be something like a fishbowl type exercise where the students, having worked with Mr. M, will share those stories with the larger faculty at a faculty meeting. We're exploring resource groups in the middle school as well. Developmentally, kids are a little bit different, but that's kind of one of the ways that we're actively looking to elicit student voice, you know, versus kind of being on the reactive end after the fact.
Thank you. You and the school committee are doing a great job. Thank you for everything.
Thank you, Councilor Chambers. Councilor Sheridan, I'll come right back up.
Okay, Lucas, we were thank you for saying that thing about the second language learners.
Yeah.
That's awesome you said that. Because I teach the school with 7% come speak English at home. And I was wondering, what are the demographics of Franklin as far as people don't speak English at home or freedom to lunch?
Yeah, so we have some of those statistics. In terms of first language, not English, I'd have to maybe get back to you on that. It's larger than the number of students who are English learners, because some of them are proficient in English, but it's a higher percentage. We have, it fluctuates a little bit with enrollment over the course of the year, but we have something like 91 or 95 students who are English learners. That is an increase of about 50% over the last decade. So 10 years ago, we had about 60. It's across all levels. The trend that we're seeing right now are more newcomers and students who have a disrupted formal education, limited, it's called SLIFE, students with a limited or interrupted formal education. And we're seeing an increased number of those students in our schools. As you might imagine, with budget development time happening, we are thinking about resources that we need to bolster in order to support their language development. In terms of other demographics, we are currently at 16% of our population qualifying for free and reduced lunch. That's doubled percentage-wise in the past decade, while keeping in mind enrollment going down. Students with disabilities is kind of level at 18.4%, which is right around the state average. We have about 17% of students identifying as, I shouldn't say a person of color, but identifying in some of those reporting categories for the Department of Education. And conversely, it's 1.7% of staff, so it's kind of a whole order of magnitude different. In the 1920 school year, so 2 years ago, that was the first year that that the Department of Education collected and we reported students identifying as non-binary for their gender. And this year we have 9 students identifying as non-binary. And I think that covers some of the demographics that we were prepared to talk about.
Yeah, one last thing. I love the idea of the field trip being paid for. But do you have anything since reduced lunches increasing to help families who want to play sports or take the bus?
Yeah, so the financial assistance policy outlines some of those other fee-based programs that are offset related to free and reduced lunch.
Okay.
I used free and reduced lunch as an example. The state's measurement of economic disadvantage has changed over the past couple of years, keeps changing, so it's hard to compare their numbers, so I used free and reduced lunch. But our financial assistance policy extends to other fee-based programs for families and
athletics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's that?
Yeah.
Councilor Frangillo.
Thank you. For you. Right. I want to express sincere gratitude for this presentation, which I kept writing down questions and you kept knocking them off. but also just the work that you guys do outside. This is a really important presentation because you guys do so much, both in administration and on the committee. I want to particularly highlight the Freedom Team, Dr. Hearn, and when she's not able to make it, she has been able to step in. Attend these monthly meetings where the police chief, town administrator, superintendent, interfaith council, I sit on there, we have parents, students, clinician, and we meet monthly to talk about and share resources and make sure that we're all on the same page around some of these instances of paid bias in town, both getting ahead as well as responding appropriately, and they've been amazing at continuing to contribute, including we had an open mic night to celebrate some identities, and it was a great event, and a lot of students and community members shared. But it made me very happy to see that Dr. Hearn was in the crowd supporting these students on her off time. So I really want to thank you guys sincerely for all the work that you do. And I also want to say the culture has changed. I was just in the high school for the first time in a long time this week. And it was a small sample size, right? I was only there for an hour. But you could just tell. And the way that students were talking about identity, new different groups around the school, it was just... Everything was way more open even than when I was there, you know, not that long ago.
Two or three years ago.
and then you talk to, you know, older residents in town, and it's we're miles ahead of where we were. So I do want to, you know, say it's not all terrible. And a lot of this is coming out, and that's a great sign that we've created a culture that people feel comfortable to start to speak out. You touched upon, I saw that it was on the slide, and you may not have mentioned it, the student survey, sort of the climate assessment. When can we expect to see results for them?
So there are two surveys that I think are relevant. The first is the Metro West Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which students took in, I want to say, the November timeframe. That's taken grades 7 through 12. It does ask some questions related to bullying and harassment. Plenty of other things that will be coming out, I want to say maybe like April. It takes a little bit of time for them to put it together. We're really eager to see what those results show. Again, this is another casualty of the pandemic. The last time that survey was issued was 2018. Should have been done in 2020, but was delayed, and so wasn't done until 2021. We do have longitudinal data going back to, I think, 2016, maybe even earlier. No, I think it's even earlier, 2012. So it'll be interesting to see, and really looking forward to what the students shared there. We have also been working with Panorama Education on a climate and culture survey as well to complement that. And I think, to Councilor Cormier Ledger's point, there's a lot going on, so we're looking to implement that. That we can return sooner rather than later. We're just homing in on the right questions. We want to make sure that it's as inclusive as possible.
That's awesome. Thank you. My last point is that you just touched upon one of the things that you do is you celebrate and recognize calendar and month and holidays, and then you talked about us to have community expressions of support. So we can push it to the council. I think we have an opportunity to better recognize some holidays and months as we come up. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Dr. Hernan Lucas, thank you so much for being here. I'm overwhelmed with what you've done. It's really amazing. All the professional development, the proactive things that you've done, and then you're reactive as well. So I have, and I think most of my fellow counselors have asked the questions that I was going to ask, but I do have one about there's no place for hate. So it seems like with this video that I think that most of us saw that could have sort of was the impetus, yeah, right, whatever, that to get us to get you here to talk about this. But so you're on the third step, which is listening to the student's voice. And I think that's really important here, right? You're doing all this work. You're making huge progress, according to Councilor Frangillo. Like, if you see the difference in an hour that you're there, that's amazing. But like, what actually will that entail? Do you have any ideas? To me, it seems like maybe there are some students that are still afraid to come and speak up. And how do we make a safe space for them?
I think we both have things to share along these lines. I think one of the ways in which is through the resource group is to bring students together who are interested in the same types of issues, maybe different ones on a personal level, but they're really concerned about bias-based incidents, and bringing them together, showing them that there's kind of power in numbers, and that they're not alone. They don't need to be alone, and providing them with an adult supporter to help develop their voice and a trusted adult. Kind of bring that to the larger faculty, the administration is kind of an ultimate goal there around eliciting student voice. And one of the things that we had kind of learned, kind of looking back around that, and it's connected to the video, is one of the avenues we were pursuing is around our student clubs, who are kind of organized and tailored towards kind of wanting to process bias-based incidents. But we also need to be mindful of how we're outreaching to all students and every student who might not be affiliated with the club organization. Franklin High is a big place. Mm-hmm. So how do we create systems and structures to make it feel smaller? And I think that's where building the capacity of our faculty and staff comes in. And so that there are smaller communities in the school where students feel comfortable with individual teachers and are able to kind of work in that regard. And I know Mr. Hanna is looking towards kind of thinking about the high school schedule and kind of like an advisory or a homeroom aspect to build those smaller communities. And the first step is kind of the resource group, and then it's even building the capacity of faculty and staff around that.
I'll add on a couple of things. So we talked about the Panorama survey, right? Survey to all kids. We talked about the Metro West Health Survey, which surveys the students. The focus groups related to the equity audit. The resource groups to provide some feedback in those areas to collect that. So you have some quantifiable data, and then you have some anecdotal data from the stories, right, that people tell and their experiences. So those pieces of information, there's also a data review of kind of how are we looking at our data? What is it telling us? Who's recommended for what? How is this going? You know, those types of things. So. I think in totality, just to answer the question, that's how we hope to learn and listen, and we have work to do, and we know that, so I appreciate the question as well.
Thank you for your answers, that's wonderful.
Can I add one thing? I don't mean to harp on this, but I think it's relevant in terms of the context, and I'm really pleased to hear Councilor Frangillo's reflection in terms of progress. The students are forcing us to move, which is awesome, right? Things are moving pretty fast, and they're leading which is great, and we can be responsive to that. So how do we create that safe space and that structure? I do want to say, and again, I don't mean to harp on this, but I think we took steps backwards in terms of relationships because of the pandemic. I think half of our high school students haven't been there in a normal school year. And so I think we're really seeing, just seeing you nod your heads, I actually have like goosebumps just thinking about the kids. They don't have that depth of relationship with the faculty and staff. They don't have that depth of relationship with each other coming from three different middle schools. And so I really see our freshmen and sophomores in particular really struggling.
Thank you for that response. I guess this kind of goes along with that. So your peer training has been stalled, your training of this, how we're trying to be proactive. And do you think that's the that would cause the uptick in the events that you've seen?
I think that's part of it. I also think that there are some experiences that students are exposed to outside of the school setting that they're watching and learning from. And there are some maybe less than favorable influences in the media. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to point anybody out, but there's some less than favorable influences that have maybe some bias-based jokes or that students are emulating. And so I think that's an avenue, to have conversations with parents, have a conversation in the community, and ways in which that you can help are to be mindful of what is sort of out there in pop culture and that students are picking up off of. We do have a social media night coming up. Social media has really exploded, more so than I even could have imagined 3 or 4 years ago. But it's really exploded as a space for some of this behavior. And we do have a social media night coming up on
March 24th,
with some experts to talk about and help inform parents on things that they can be doing to monitor what's happening. The students were, there's a lot of opportunity there, I think, for some of them.
That's wonderful. I'm glad you're thinking about that and you're already doing that. I just want to thank you for your solution, or for one of the things that we can do to help you. And I think you said places to heal, but I was thinking more about a healing hug. I think we all kind of need that. So I think we could help with that. So thank you both so much for everything you've done.
Thank you.
You're doing a great job. And the school committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Council Hanlon. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the good news is when I graduated high school from Watertown in 1988, I ended up getting a seal of evidence as well. I'm still perfect at English and bad English since growing up in the city.
I'm not telling jokes, though.
That's true. Somebody's going to add
jokes continue to be weak.
Somebody has to add some light to all the situation. My question is a little bit different. Not something I've quite heard, because everyone's pretty much asked most of the questions as it is already. It's just kind of focused around current events and how the students are coping, not only with the exiting of the pandemic, dealing with a multitude of other social emotional learning effects that have been caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, but also with recent international politics, for instance, Russia's potential attack on Ukraine, as well as China's antagonizing things, as well as inflation and other international things that are ultimately adding to the stress and uncertainty that is this day and age. And just kind of get a general gauge from yourself as well as Lucas on how the kids, especially the high school kids and maybe even middle school kids, dealing with that even extra level of stress on top of everything else.
I'm glad you brought that up. It definitely affects them, and affects them in some pretty profound ways. And one of the things that we've been hearing from them is how much they want to process with trusted adults in their lives, and how much they do want to hear from faculty and staff related to current events. And so, we do periodically, from time to time, send information out to our faculty and staff related to the current event. How to talk about it, provide them with some resources to kind of scaffold and structure that. And then sometimes, too, following that up with a communication with families to do the same around having a conversation with families about the current event. The thing that's jumping out to mind was at the Capitol on January 6th. There are other examples as well, but that's the one that's kind of jumping out to me because it does affect them. And they want to be talking about it. They want to be processing it. And I think they need to be. It's an educational opportunity for, trained adults to help them process. And, while being balanced, I think it's important to note that, while providing sort of a balanced, neutral and safe space to talk about things. It does
profoundly
affect the way we're working with our staff to build some capacity in that area, because sometimes it's hard for the adults to even process what's going on.
I can only imagine that it just adds to the level of uncertainty, mm-hmm. Fears locally, mm-hmm. And to have international fears on the same scope, wondering what their future is going to be like. And when growing up in these, it was always with Russia and the Cold War and having to do with genetics and nuclear war back then. Now we've got more stimulated international issues. My only concern is taking everything that they've already have thrown at them today and throwing out in this as well, that the dialogue just continues. You're getting some sound advice from teachers, from parents as well. Myself as a person who's had two children go through Franklin public school system successfully, and three more that are currently in the Franklin public school system. I just want to state that I appreciate everything that you and your staff and the teachers and everybody who goes to work every single day works as hard as they do and diligently with their hearts and their sleeves to educate our students and our children. It means the world to me, and I know it means the world to the community. I just never want to understate the importance of the teacher's role. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. Chair Mercer, can I just make one comment about what I said, Councilor Jones? I just want to also be sure to recognize it would be developmentally appropriate. So, the elementary teachers might be more responsive to what students bring to them. If something were to come up and were to be raised, whereas a high school educator might structure a conversation directly. So I just want to make sure we do try to take a developmental approach.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Hill. I just want everybody to know that Mr. Jones, Councilor Jones, was timing himself and had 8 seconds left and finished.
Thank God.
Just so you know.
WS7, good time, Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Councilor DeLocco.
Sarah, thank you. You guys did a great job. Denise, you guys do a great job on the school committee, too, so I just want you to know that. I'm glad Councilor Chan brought up about the depression because, since the pandemic, we have seen addiction gone and skyrocketed. We would say, and our hotline is just off the chart, and it's all through the schools. We all know that you guys are doing a great job of trying to handle it the best we can. Colby kind of touched on a funny point about people long ago, the difference between you going in at, he graduated with my daughter, and, long ago, and you brought up the language. My father spoke fluent Italian and actually wrote it too, but I would ask him to teach me, and he would say, I don't need to teach you, you're an American now. So that's just, way back when, as he got older, towards the end of his life, he actually said, I think I messed up on that. You know what I mean? And, but that's common at that age. So you guys do a great job. It's tough. Bullying's tough. I can give you my experience. I was a freshman in 1975, and I went to High Park High. So the segregated busing started in 1974. Okay. So when I went to school, I walked through a metal detector, and I got one. And then I had the TPF line both sides of the corridors, everywhere, right? So when a fight broke out, those TPF guys, they're all World War II guys, old Korean guys, those billy clubs really did hurt. So, I mean, it was a very bad time, and bullying back then, look, you handle it one way, and that was the only way you could handle it was to fight back. It was the only way to do it. But I'm glad to see that you guys handle people in a different way. You bring the people in, you talk to them. If we got into a fight or something broke out, you're gone for 5 days, you got thrown out, come back in 5 days, that's all that happened. So those were the bad times. I'd love to speak to it. I love, you know, if you guys want me to speak, I can give you stories that you can't even imagine, and that's how bad it was. I mean, the names I was called when I was walking down, I won't even entertain them anymore. But it has changed so much, and you guys are doing a great job when it comes to that. And the stuff that I heard, you know, I'm thinking back to my days, you know, get out of school, you're out, you know, and you guys are handling it a different way. And, you know, obviously my son, they love Lucas. They talk about him all the time because they had him in school, they love him. That's a good, that's great. That's great news. That's good community. So anything we can do, I'd gladly help.
Councilor DeLarco in the 70s, our son was Councilor Pellegrini and myself. There's a blue bench in the historical museum that we used to get put outside the principal's office and sit on the blue bench.
And that was your time.
But that was way before.
We just got thrown out.
Jamie.
Yes, thank you, through Mr. Chairman. I just want to say, you know, unbelievable presentation. I just want to say how happy I am for the superintendent, Lucas, the school committee, the entire school department staff. I know that the 58 slides was a long presentation. It was well coordinated at the school committee with other parties involved and administrators. But why I'm so happy for them is I've been so lucky to be right next door watching all this unfold for a really long time. And for the community, the council, folks watching at home, and school department family to be able to see in a comprehensive way, Councilor Hammond nailed it. It's completely overwhelmed. You know, if this doesn't help, I look up and I say, good God, what else will be done? Yes, we know we have more to do. I feel a relief. I feel a relief for everybody. This has been a very, very difficult couple of years. We've had high profile incidents around the world, at Jones's Point in America, in Massachusetts, in Franklin. And these are very tense conversations. And I think a presentation like this and seeing the impact and what Councilor Fagiola spoke about a few moments ago, culture is changing. And this is a moment where there is going to be a lot of change. And I said it a while ago that the incident that happened in Minneapolis to George Floyd is probably going to have a longer impact on our country than really reflecting on this pandemic. And that's a great thing. And I'm really, really proud and happy for all of them to be able to summarize all of this on behalf of the community at large. And I really, really hope that a lot of the viewers come away with a sense of confidence that the school department in particular is really taking this issue seriously and is doing a tremendous amount to try to solve it. And that there's a yellow brick road in front of us that people can hop on and walk toward, and they've really put out a roadmap, I think, for the district. Second thing, quickly, you know, and I want to assure all of you, I know all of you know this, but just for the public who came up, you know, the chief of police, the fire chief, and really every single department head and member of our staff, and I feel this way about the school department staff, our staff is a culture of unity. They support us, we support them. I've never seen a moment of anything less than unwavering support for one another. Even in the difficult times where we might disagree publicly on some policy issues between the council and the school committee previously or currently, everyone still is in the same boat, rowing in the same direction. And I think that's a powerful thing. We talked years ago about One Franklin. I think our school department and our departments really do embody that to the fullest extent possible. I'm not going to talk about a variety of other things that the town is doing. This is their moment. But I just think from my perch, when I look at all of our department heads and town staff, the collaboration and support that's there for everybody on all of these issues has been paramount and unwavering for the last several years since we've taken over. And finally, I just to Councilor Cormier-Ledger's question earlier about what is it that we can do, I think actually the school department, and you just mentioned it, Councilor Orgo, has actually shown us the model.
Mm.
Instead of detention, instead of suspension, okay, sit down. Lucas's explanation of bringing a parent together of a child that did something like a swastika or hurt someone else and the victim, and working through that is powerful stuff. They're not canceling people, they're not yelling at people, they're not screaming at people, they're not, you know, not saying we're never going to talk to them again. They're bringing that bond closer to that understanding. And I think the Franklin Freedom Team, I think at the last meeting, talked to Justin about what's the program moving forward. You know, I think that that group has a lot of potential to bring that same restorative justice type concept to the community at large and that audience about how do we help people in the community understand that these issues have a lot of pain for people, and then maybe where they're getting their information or from wherever the source is, how do we bring those people together? As I watch the civil rights violation numbers, and I see those, it was the same thing in my high school, you're out for a week. You know, you call, and I think that the model that they've provided here, which is a tremendous amount of work, and brings with it a tremendous amount of effort, heart and soul, passion. I think as we move forward and we continue to try to get better as a community, as a state, you know, I hope we look at some of the things that the school district is doing. And I'm so thrilled that they were able to have this opportunity tonight and last week to show the work that they're doing, and that maybe some of these ideas that are working in the school department can help be replicated throughout the rest of the community. So I just want to thank them for their incredible support for and partnership, and certainly Sarah's leadership on all of these issues has been incredible, and I'm just thrilled that it was able to come out of tonight's council meeting and other meetings, and we look forward to more progress in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jamie. Is there anyone in the audience that has a question or a comment? In Zoom land? I guess I just close with, I certainly echo my fellow counselors' comments and thanks to you, Dr. Hearn, Lucas, and Chip Spencer, for coming before us tonight and going through a shortened version of this presentation, but a very enlightening version that I'm sure was provided the council as well as the listening audience a lot of very, very good information. And we thank you very much for bringing this to us. And I'm just going to add one comment, because I think it's a comment that I make occasionally. But we are such a fortunate community to have the school central offices and the town's municipal offices in the same building, and have the town administrator and the superintendent of schools with offices back to back that they can go in and share information and bounce things off of one another. I don't know another community that is set up like that. And I applaud the previous councils for putting that together and putting those two entities into the same building.
Isn't that us?
The only other thing I'll say, I'll end on a lighter note. I can remember my days as on a school committee and school committee as school committee chair, You people have more acronyms than anybody in the world. I needed a cheat sheet when I was on the school committee just to remember what all the acronyms stood for. But thank you. And thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Chair.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.